I'm very happy now to welcome Ben Cohen. He's a businessman, activist, and philanthropist. He's co-founder of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream, and he will be in Santa Fe on Saturday, the 15th of November at 6:30 at the Santa Fe Community Convention Center. The event is called Ice Cream and Activism. It's presented by the Santa Fe Green Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good to be here at the cafe.
Wish you were here in person, but you'll be here soon. You are an entrepreneur who's been thinking about social and environmental responsibility from the beginning. Why, in your view, is that kind of thinking so relatively rare in the United States?
Well, I think it's a mindset. You know, we've grown up in a society and a culture where we've been led to believe that things are compartmentalized, and if you want to do something based on your values, or you want to do something to help people or address a particular social problem, you do it in the nonprofit social service sector. And if you want to do something to make money, you do that kind of 180 degrees apart in the for-profit business sector. You know, what Jerry and I discovered was that it's a false dichotomy. That, you know, business has been putting out this line, this idea that, oh, geez, if we try to address social problems, we try to make things better for the society as a whole, we'd go out of business. And it's just not true. It's a myth, and it's about time that myth has been busted.
So Ben & Jerry's is often held up as this example to other entrepreneurs who do, I mean, there's more of them now, I think, who want to make money and do no harm. What other companies do you see doing this? Have you worked with people directly? Do you mentor socially conscious entrepreneurs?
Sure. There's a bunch of businesses that are doing it, that are growing. You know, there's a clothing business called Indigenous Designs that has their clothing made by artisan craftspeople in the developing world. There's a Guayaquil yerba mate business, you know, that's, I think, doing about $20 million now, that grows the yerba mate for their tea in the developing world in a way that supports the farmers there and protects our land. You know, there's restaurants, there's lots of restaurants that are integrating social concerns. The one that sticks out most is the White Dough Cafe in Philadelphia, where, amongst other things, they have a project called Eating with the Enemy, and they establish sister restaurant projects in countries that the U.S. regards as adversaries. You know, there's a company in San Francisco that's an office supply company that all its profits go back to nonprofits. There's really kind of an endless list, and then, of course, there's the old ones, you know, probably the most famous of which would be Patagonia.
So, I mean, here's the thing, and I wondered what your take was on this. My sense is that companies that are, I mean, not Ben & Jerry's ice cream, because ice cream is pretty much affordable to everybody, but there's a lot of companies that are making, for example, clothing that's not made in sweatshops that is unaffordable to people who are working minimum wage jobs, which is the increasing number of people in the United States ever more. And so it's kind of like, if you want to buy stuff that's made by socially conscious companies, you kind of have to be in upper income brackets, but that upper income bracket is supported by the non-functional system. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, and that certainly has been a problem. But, you know, companies that I mentioned, the White Dough Cafe is a restaurant, not a top-of-the-line restaurant. It's not a fine dining place. But I understand what you're saying. I mean, Yerba Mate Tea, Guayaquil is, you know, sold at competitive prices with other teas and ready-to-drink teas. But I definitely understand what you're saying, that, you know, there are a bunch of companies that are trying to factor in social concerns, and they tend to be at the upper end of the market. You know, I mean, one of the issues is that it's mostly small businesses that are doing this. And, you know, small businesses need to be in niche markets. And niche markets are, by definition, those markets that the big, huge companies are not interested in because they're so small. And some of the characteristics of those niche markets is that they're, you know, they're more expensive. They're for the more expensive stuff. But, you know, that office supply company that I talked about in San Francisco, it's at competitive, you know, market rates. It just sells office supplies, you know, medium-priced office supplies.
Right, right. Now, you sold, you and Jerry sold Ben & Jerry's to Unilever in the year 2000. Does it uphold the standards that you and Jerry held for the company? Is there any provision that requires them to do so?
Well, first, I need to make clear that the company got sold. We didn't try to sell it. I tried very hard to keep it independent. But we were a publicly held company at the time, and there wasn't anything that I was able to do to prevent it. But as part of the acquisition agreement, yes, there's a written, legally binding document that requires Unilever to uphold a lot of the social mission of the company. And there's a independent, separate board of directors for Ben & Jerry's made up pretty much of people who were on the board before the acquisition that is responsible for maintaining the social mission. So, you know, there are some things that, you know, had actually gone better. You know, in terms of fair trade ingredients, the company has a lot more fair trade ingredients now than it used to before the acquisition. But, you know, in terms of, you know, the issue of GMO labeling, you know, there was a situation where Ben & Jerry's was advocating for it and Unilever was advocating against it. But, you know, so there's, it varies. You know, there's some things that have gone well. You know, I think in terms of being on the cutting edge and taking risks, I think that it doesn't do that as much as it used to.
You mentioned a moment ago that big companies are not primarily engaged in dealing with the social consequences of their actions as companies. Small niche companies have more freedom to do so. What would it take for large companies to be concerned with things like the well-being of their employees, of their community, of the environment, of the materials they use, and things like that? Because it seems like a kind of big, giant suicide mission if those big companies don't start seeing things a different way.
Well, I think big companies are becoming better. And the reason why they're becoming better is because of consumer pressure. Big companies are starting to realize more and more that if they aren't using their power to address social issues, improve the quality of life in the society, customers are going to choose to buy elsewhere. They're going to choose to buy from smaller local companies. They're going to choose to buy from a big company competitor that's seen the light. You know, there's a great example in Europe, London. It's a company called Marks & Spencer that adopted a policy called Plan A. And in it, they identified, 20 or 30 different measurable objectives that they would hit in order to improve their benefit to society. And they were public about it. And I think they're doing quite well financially. The amazing thing, I mean, what we really discovered at Ben & Jerry's and what it just takes so long for these big, huge corporations to understand is that as you support the community, as your company supports the community supports you back. And what do you know? When you do that, you don't have to advertise as much because people want to buy your stuff because they agree with your values. I mean, this is not rocket science, but it's very, you know, it goes very counter to what people learn in business school. And big companies, you know, they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on marketing. You know, some of them are spending billions of dollars on marketing. I mean, what is marketing? I mean, it's coming up with cute TV ads, doing cute stuff, doing funny stuff, doing ads that are emotionally grabbing to try to get the customer to feel good about the company. Well, you can do that a lot more directly if you just do good stuff. Use that money to actually help the community, and the community wants to buy your stuff. They don't need to be beat over the head to do it.
Now, you've been involved in campaigns to get money out of politics, which seems like an uphill battle in this country. What do you think it would take to actually make that happen? I mean, we're looking at the most expensive midterm election ever just behind us.
Well, of course it's an uphill battle. It was one of the Supreme Court justices, one of the great ones, who's retired now, who said that any of the things that I've done in my life that have been worth doing had been declared impossible before they were done. So, yeah, we need to be fighting for the stuff that's important. And getting money out of politics that's the only thing that's going to save the democracy. I mean, there was a study recently published, by these really respected people that said, based on all the observable data, the country is no longer a democracy. I mean, it's being ruled by a few really wealthy people and corporations. So getting money out of politics is the key to solving environmental problems, it's the key to solving healthcare problems, it's the key to solving energy problems, it's the key to solving usurious financial interest rates, because as John McCain says, what we have now is a system of legalized bribery. Those huge corporations are spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year to give that money to politicians so that they'll pass laws that the corporations want that improve the bottom line for the corporations at the expense of everybody else. We have to fight this fight, because if we don't, we may as well just hand over the keys to the corporations and the 0.2% and say, yeah, we're going to be your pawns and we're going to live to pad your bottom line.
Well, not only that, but I mean, things fall apart. You know, the food system falls apart. Soil is degraded. The oceans die. And things that cannot be undone. I mean, that's the scary part of it, even more than being pawns of these people and working at ridiculously low wages. I mean, it's just so profoundly unsustainable.
Yeah, but corporations, sustainability, except for their PR, is not part of their vocabulary. It's about quarterly profits, maybe if you're thinking long-term, annual profits. But, I mean, it's a little the same for politicians. I mean, when things finally get so bad, when the earth is so destroyed, they're going to be retired and out of office.
So tell us about the projects you're working on. You're working on a stamp project called stampstampede.org and other initiatives to get money out of politics. I mean, how do you think we can do it? How can our listeners who are listening to this program right now participate in that movement?
Well, that's the beauty of the Stampede, is that it allows anybody to participate in the movement anywhere, anytime, with whomever they're with or on their own. I mean, there's a huge movement in the country with lots of major national organizations, a lot of state-level organizations, loads of local organizations that are all working to get money out of politics. And, as a result of that, there have been over 600 municipalities that have voted in favor of this amendment to get money out of politics. There have been 16 states that have voted in favor of it. There are several states that have passed state-level legislation that calls for small donor financing and essentially gets big money out of politics. There's been national legislation that's been advanced. So the Stampede helps to build this movement by spreading the word on paper currency. And we are literally using rubber stamps to stamp messages on money that say not to be used for bribing politicians, amend the Constitution, or stamp money out of politics, not to be used for buying elections. There's several different ones. And if you visit stampstampede.org, you can see it. You can buy a stamp there. It's a nonprofit organization. And there's now over 25,000 people around the country that are stamping currency with these messages. And what it does is it creates a petition on steroids, because usually when you sign a petition, you know, hopefully the person who's the target of the petition eventually sees it. In this case, it's a very public petition, because when you put a dollar into circulation, 900 people see it as it gets passed around from person to person over the next 2.5 years. So it's this constant visual support that snowballs and generates this overwhelming public demand that politicians need to start listening to. And it starts giving people the idea that, yeah, well, there's a lot of people who agree with me, and yeah, we're making our voice heard, and it's becoming really public. You know, the motto of the Outdoor Advertising Association of America used to be, tell people what you want to tell them often enough, and sooner or later they'll believe it as a matter of course. So that's the idea, that we start using our currency, because if the Supreme Court has ruled that money is free speech, well, let's use money and stamp it with our messages. It's legal, too.
Ben Cohen is co-founder of Ben & Jerry's, and once again, he will be in Santa Fe on Saturday, the 15th of November at 6:30 at the Santa Fe Community Convention Center. The event is called Ice Cream and Activism. It's presented by the Santa Fe Green Chamber of Commerce. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
All right. Good talking with you. Come on down. Get some ice cream.
Excellent.